Welcome to the Mental Breakdown. I'm Dr. Bernie Wilkinson. And in today's podcast, I'm going to return to a topic that I've talked about before, and that is sugar. But first, a couple of announcements, and then you'll see why I'm going to talk a little bit about sugar today. The Parenting Your ADHD Child course is available on Paydia LLC. The link is in the show notes, and you'll be able to go there and check out the outline for the entire course. There's 20 lessons, walks you through what ADHD is, how we typically treat ADHD. There's lectures on medications, as well as just some common things and typical things that you can do at home to help manage and better structure your home setting to just make things a little bit better for you and your child there at home. The Handbook for Raising an Emotionally Healthy Child, Part 1, Behavior Management, is available on Kindle. It's a book that we wrote and published earlier this year that covers behavior management and what to expect in behaviors in children from birth through adolescence. We are in the final stages, finishing up the final chapter of Part 2 of that book, which is called Attention, where we focus on parent-child interactions. And so go ahead and we'd really like for you to go ahead and get the part one so that you can be ready. So when part two comes out, hopefully within the next month or so, you'll be able to get that book and sort of continue on. Part three will be coming out later this year. We're really looking forward to really digging in and finishing that one up as well. Finally, the Elimination Diet Manual is also on Amazon Kindle. A great tool for eliminating things from your diet that could be contributing to mental, emotional, and even physical health issues. And it's really related to some of the things we're going to talk about today in this podcast. So the Elimination Diet Manual is 99 cents on Amazon Kindle. I would really encourage you to get it just to read through it and use the structure that we have built in for you to eliminate things from your diet that, again, could be causing some of those problems. And you know, it doesn't take a lot of time. It just takes a little bit of work, and you can really just see what, if anything, that you're consuming could be contributing to some problems for you. So, all right, that's all the announcements. We're going to dig into this topic of sugar just a little bit today, and hopefully it'll help give you a little bit more information and make you consider a little bit more about what you're eating, but maybe more importantly, what you're feeding your child. On a daily basis, and what you're allowing him to and her to eat and drink on a daily basis. So enjoy. Welcome to the Mental Breakdown. I'm Dr. Bernie. Earlier this month, on August 22nd, of 2016, the American Health Association released a scientific statement called Added Sugars and Cardiovascular Risk in Children. Now, what they did in this paper is it's actually a really comprehensive, good paper that was published online, and I'll have the link to it in the show notes so you can have full access to the PDF. But what they talked about and walked us through is the current recommendations or the most recent recommendations made by various organizations, what the effects of sugars are on children and adolescents, and then what their recommendations are. And so what I'm going to do in this podcast is just kind of walk us through that paper a little bit to help you understand a little bit of about what they recommend, what they're talking about, and why, especially here in our podcast, we've talked so much about the need and importance of eliminating sugars from our diet. You know, we're gonna see in this scientific statement that the American Health Association is sort of right on board with what we've been talking about. So let's just walk through a couple of sections that they had in the paper and then kind of wrap it up a little bit and hopefully in a way that you'll be able to see what's going on and interest you enough to go on and read the paper for yourself. So the first thing that they did was they started out talking about what the current recommendations are. And they showed that, you know, based upon the food pyramid, The food pyramid suggested that about 6% to 10% or so of our total calorie intake for a day could be discretionary calories. So that what they mean by that are calories that are consumed typically as added sugars and things like that, and solid fats and that kind of stuff, that are part of our daily diet after we've already met the requirements, all of our other nutrient and nutritional needs. So these discretionary calories are calories that would be left over after we've already consumed as much protein and other nutrients and fats and stuff like that we need. So based upon that mathematical, basically, calculation, about 6 to 10% of our total calorie intake for a day can be discretionary and therefore used as, you know, this added intake of sugars and stuff like that. So the recommendation was for children 1 to 6 years of age, they should drink sweetened beverages or sweetened beverages should be limited to about 4 to 6 ounces per day. Okay, so this is where we are currently, that the recommendation for children between the ages of 1 and 6 should be limited to 4 to 6 ounces per day of sweetened beverages. For those who are 7 to 18 years of age, it should be limited to 8 to 12 ounces of sweetened beverages per day. Now, we can almost stop right there because we already have a problem, right? Because how often do we limit ourselves typically to that type of restriction? I mean, if you drink your coffee, even as an adult, if you drink your coffee with sugar in it, you're going to start pushing that requirement or that recommendation. We, you know, 8 to 12 ounces for a teenager. Well, bottles of soda have more than, sometimes more than 12 ounces. Sometimes they're 16 ounces. And of course, they have the monster ones that are like 32 ounces. And they have the liter bottles. And it's just we have them in an availability now that's such a high quantity that we very easily, very quickly exceed this recommendation from the Food and Drug Administration and from based upon the food pyramid that we use here in the United States. So, but that's the recommendation for right now. And that started out and came out in 2015. So just last year where they were making that recommendation. Now, later that same year, also in 2015, the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee said that we need to reduce sugar. It's a great idea, but that it should be limited to about 4 to 6% of our total daily calories. So it went from 6 to 10% down to 4 to 6% based upon their recommendations. And they said, and from what the American Heart Association sort of presented in their summary of information from around the world, this recommendation from the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee is very consistent with what the World Health Organization has been saying since 2003, which is that the total amount of sugar, added sugar intake for a day should not exceed 5% of our total calories. So that 2015 Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee recommendation of 4 to 6% is pretty consistent with the World Health Organization's less than 5% recommendation. And so the important thing with that is that about 5% of our daily caloric intake is only about 100 calories, which in terms of how much sugar is that, it's about 25 grams, which is pretty consistent with what the research suggests that our body needs for functioning, but also what our body typically utilizes, but that we get it from other sources as well. This is 25 grams of added sugar. So it's not, we'll talk about this again in a little bit, this is not talking about 25 grams of sugar that you get from eating fruits and vegetables and drinking milk and those kinds of things, because all of those have naturally occurring sugars in them. This is added sugar. This is sugar added to beverages, added to foods that we're eating and those kinds of things. So it's a little bit different of a source. But now, with that in mind, with those recommendations in mind, let's then talk about what is typically used at this time. And this is a very quick point, and that is that children between the ages of 2 and 19 years of age right now consume on average 80 grams of sugar per day. That was the dramatic pause that I was looking for. 80 grams of sugar per day is what children and adolescents are consuming right now on average. So obviously that means that some teens and children are consuming more and some are consuming a little bit less. But, you know, the research is pretty difficult here because most of us tend to minimize or we tend to underreport consumption of things that we see as unhealthy. So if somebody says, hey, how much sugar do you eat per day? We're going to tend to err on the low end as opposed to err high or even be more close to correct. We're going to tend to undershoot it just a little bit because, you know, we don't want to seem as though, wow, do we really eat 80 grams of sugar per day? So nonetheless, that's what the research suggests right now, based upon people's report, based upon survey results. Children and adolescents between the ages of 2 and 19 are consuming about 80 grams of sugar per day. So that's three times the recommended amount from the World Health Organization and some of the other national organizations that are making recommendations about that at this time. So we're consuming a lot more than we need and a lot more than we should be. So when we think about the consequences then of our current usage, The primary issue, and of course this comes from the American Heart Association, so they're going to talk about cardiovascular risk. Well, when it comes to cardiovascular risk, there's a number of things that we need to look at, like obesity and high blood pressure and some of those kinds of things, and we're going to talk about each of those in just a moment. But when we think about the risk of and the consequences of using and consuming so much sugar, we certainly have to think about how it affects our cardiovascular system. We know that from the research that there is an increased risk of cardiovascular diseases based upon our use and consumption of sugar. But again, it's kind of difficult because there's lots of other factors at play. As we'll talk about in just a moment, you know, many times when we're consuming a lot of sugar, we're eliminating a lot of other nutrients. And so is it the sugar consumption that's causing the problem, or is it the absence of other nutrients that we need that's the problem? And it's difficult to determine that. Also, it's difficult to determine because, again, as I said a moment ago, a lot of times we tend to minimize, we tend to underreport our use of some of these kinds of foods and some of these things. So it's hard to know what a person is actually doing unless we do a very controlled study. And as the paper pointed out, doing that kind of study, a study where we can really find causality, where we can control things so well that we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that this causes that, then it's not real world. It's not the way that people eat in the real world. And so that kind of study is it may be good in some ways, but it's also not relevant. It's not useful in a real world setting. So there's lots of problems when it comes to that kind of research. And so that research has not been done. It hasn't been completed as thoroughly as we would like for it to be, but they're on their way. So let's talk a little bit now about some of the different areas or different types of cardiovascular disease that is that seems to be associated with sugar intake. And the first, of course, is obesity. We know that there have been plenty of news reports and papers written and articles written and columns in newspapers written about the obesity problem here in the United States, especially obesity in children and adolescents. And the data suggests very clearly that individuals who eat more sugar tend to consume more calories. And this is especially true when sugar is consumed through sugar-sweetened beverages. So when we drink sugary drinks, we tend to eat more food. Now, that hopefully makes, well, I don't know, hopefully. It should make some sense. Sugar is a sensation that we like. Our bodies like the taste of sugar, and that of course, is evolutionary because we need sugar to for our cells and our neurons and our bodies to function. So to create energy, we need some sugar. Now, again, we consume way more sugar than we need to function, but our body is designed to seek sugar because it needs it to function. Now, with that in mind, as we're eating sugar, that in many ways increases our appetite. It makes us want to eat more. And so when we're consuming beverages, which really doesn't do anything for us nutritionally, it makes us tend to eat more. And so we consume more calories throughout the course of a day than we would if we weren't consuming those sugary beverages. And so one of the links, again, that this article made or this paper made is that when we consume more sugary beverages, we eat more. And when we eat more, again, of course, that leads to and contributes to the obesity problem that we're seeing, especially with our children and adolescents. Another cardiovascular disease or cardiovascular problem is high blood pressure. And sure enough, there's data to suggest that children and young adults who consume excessive fructose, which is a particular type of sugar, when they consume excessive fructose, they tend to experience elevated blood pressure. Now, fructose, we get that in a variety of sources and from a variety of sources and in a variety of forms, one of which, and it's probably the worst that we could use, is high fructose corn syrup. And basically what they've done is they've taken the sugar from the corn and concentrated it so densely that that it is very unnatural. It doesn't present like it does in nature. And then they put it in everything. It's present in so many processed foods because it's very, very sweet. It's very cheap and inexpensive. And so they put it in almost everything, especially those processed foods. So again, the bottom line comes down to excessive fructose ingestion tends to relate to high blood pressure in children and adolescents and young adults. Another cardiovascular risk is something called dyslipidemia. And what that basically is high cholesterol, high triglycerides, and that low HDL, or the low levels of high density lipoproteins. And all of that can lead to problems with our arteries and veins, and they start to get hardened and cause problems that way, to where the blood can't flow through our circulatory system as freely and as quickly and as efficiently as we would like it to. So, and of course, that then can lead to high blood pressure and some other issues. So dyslipidemia is a big issue. What the paper presents is that data from both cross-sectional and longitudinal studies suggest that lowering our consumption of sugar improves our levels of triglycerides and that HDL. So when we decrease, and especially in children and adolescents, if we decrease sugar intake, we see an improvement in their levels of triglycerides and that high density lipoproteins. So again, that then decreases the potential for circulatory system problems and issues with their arteries and veins. So we don't have any of that hardening. We don't have any of that congestion in there that makes it difficult for the blood to pump through their body. And again, all of that from decreasing sugar intake. Another cardiovascular issue, though it doesn't sound like a cardiovascular issue, but it is related because of the way that our liver works, is called non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And basically what happens, and we won't go into a lot of detail here, but of course our liver filters most of the toxins and issues and things in our that we consume and things that are in our body that we don't want. So our liver is sort of the filter for all of that. And when we have fatty livers and we have problems with our liver, it doesn't efficiently remove those things from our body. And so we can become toxic, we can become jaundiced and those kinds of things when our liver's not working efficiently. Now, admittedly, more research is needed in this area, but there was a longitudinal study completed that links that liver fat, hepatic fat, and again, fructose consumption in children. So again, we need more research, but there's suggestions from studies that have already been conducted that there is a relationship between fructose consumption, and again, that oftentimes is high fructose corn syrup, but fructose consumption and hepatic fat. And the last cardiovascular disease that we're going to talk about, and we couldn't do any of this without talking about insulin resistance and diabetes. We have seen a tremendous increase in the prevalence of diabetes in children and adolescents. And so there certainly is a need to research this and to understand what's happening with this a little bit more. Now, surprisingly, I think, I know that I was surprised when I read this, the data here is really inconclusive. That said, you know, there seems to be a relationship between insulin resistance and added sugar intake for overweight children. So if a child is already overweight, then there seems to be a relationship between insulin resistance and sugar intake. In children who are within the normal range for their weight, that relationship does not seem to exist as much. I find that very interesting. And again, you know, we need a lot more research in that area. But if there's a child or if you have a child who is already a little overweight, that connection or that relationship between the development and presence of insulin resistance with sugar intake is certainly there. And so you might want to certainly be very cautious and very aware of how much sugar the child is taking in. But when we put all this together, we can see that excessive sugar intake leads to, especially through sugary drinks, will lead to the potential for weight gain and increased, of course, increased caloric intake so that the child is then gaining weight and may become overweight or even obese. And then we have the issue with the development of insulin resistance as a result of excessive sugar intake. So all of these things sort of link together in very concerning and problematic ways. And so the underlying thread that seems to hold them all together is sugar intake. How much sugar we're taking in? Again, 80 grams per day. So the paper sort of summarizes all of this by saying that the research suggests that excessive sugar consumption in childhood and adolescence is related to multiple cardiovascular risks and diseases. This is especially the case for, again, sugar-sweetened beverages, sodas, and other drinks that have sugar added to them. And this increased sugar intake is often related to very poor nutritional intake. And so, again, they pointed out that when we consume more sugar, we tend to sacrifice other vitamins and nutrients that we really need. And so we're consuming calories through sugars, but we're not consuming calories in ways to get us the vitamins that we need and some of the other micronutrients that we really need for our bodies to function in a healthy and appropriate and good way so that when we think about children and adolescents, for them to be able to grow and for their brains to be able to form the way that they need to form. This is a very problematic relationship that we have with excessive sugar intake and the absence of healthy vital nutrients. So what do they recommend? Now, as I get to their recommendations, I have to admit that I was taken aback by their recommendations, and not necessarily in a bad way. I think that their recommendations are fantastic, actually. I think that they're great. However, you know, the problem is that when I think about people actually complying or following these recommendations, that's where I of course have some concern, because you know, when you as we go through these three primary recommendations, you're going to see that I think a lot of people are going to have problems with it. So, regardless, Here's their recommendations. Again, with the caveat that more research is certainly needed. The first recommendation is that children and adolescents should limit their intake of sugar-sweetened beverages to no more than 8 ounces per week. Another dramatic pause here. Per week. 8 ounces per week. So what that means is the near elimination of sugary drinks like sodas and soft drinks and a lot of sports drinks, because a lot of sports drinks have added sugar to them. That is remarkable. That is amazing, because if you think about, again, the fact that we're consuming the 80 grams that I mentioned earlier, the paper points out that it's evenly split. So there's about 40 grams per day of sugar that we're taking from food, and then another 40 grams of sugar that we're taking in per day simply from sugary drinks, sugar-added beverages that have sugar added to them. So to start there and go down to 8 ounces per week is that's a pretty dramatic and massive recommendation. And again, that's maybe now you can see where my concern was before, that while I think that it's great, I think that everyone should follow that recommendation. I know that I certainly recommend it to my patients that we should be eliminating as many of these sugary drinks as we can. The reality is that I think a lot of people will have a really significant difficulty with that. But nonetheless, that was their first recommendation. The second recommendation is that children and adolescents should consume no more than 25 grams of added sugar per day. Now, that goes back to, that's not really a new recommendation, because that's consistent with what the World Health Organization said and what many of our national organizations are recommending is no more than 25 grams of sugar per day. That's about that 5% of our daily intake. So when we think about what that means, most of that 25 grams should come from foods that we're eating, as opposed to those sugary sweet drinks and beverages that we usually consume. Because again, remember that relationship between the more sugary drinks that we consume, the more calories in general that we're going to consume. And so decreasing those sugary drinks is going to decrease our overall calories. But then when we think about the 25 grams of added sugar that is allowable or recommended, we can keep that in our diet as opposed to through those beverages. Now, the third recommendation is that it is another important one. I think that it makes complete sense. And I think that most people would say, well, that, of course, that makes perfect sense. But when we have children, we tend to break this type of rule. And that is that added sugar should be completely avoided in children under the age of 2. And again, should make sense. We should think, oh, of course. But under the age of 2, I know that I have seen parents put sweet tea, soda in bottles for their 10, 11, 12-month-olds. So what we're saying is that not just beverages, but added sugars in general should be completely avoided in children under the age of 2. And again, that comes from some of the research that suggests that earlier that we start in our consumption of sugar, the more problematic and the earlier we're going to see some of those issues associated with sugar consumption. So avoiding it as early as possible is important. So those are their three recommendations. And again, I don't have a problem with their recommendations in general. I think that they're great recommendations. I just think that we're going to have to work really hard to follow them. We're going to have to work really hard to make sure that we comply with those recommendations. Now, the good news is that this added sugar does not include naturally occurring sugars. So the sugars that we get from fruits and vegetables and milk and some of those kinds of things, that sugar is okay. That's naturally occurring sugar. When you consume it in a natural way, like by eating the fruit itself or by eating the vegetable itself, when we consume it in a natural way, like eating the whole fruit and the whole vegetable, we are also getting a lot of other nutrients like fiber and other things that make it to where our body produces and processes those sugars in a better way. They don't hit our body the way that they do when it's the processed sugars. So eating whole fruits, eating whole vegetables, drinking milk. I'm not a big fan of drinking and consuming dairy products, but if you do, that sugar is okay because of the other nutrients that come with it. So what that means is this doesn't include the good stuff, doesn't include fruit juices. Many times when fruits are processed and vegetables are processed to turn it into a juice through a plant process, you know, it's different when you put it in a processor at home and you're putting it through the processor to make a juice. That's completely different, typically. But when it's done at a plant, many of those other nutrients, many of the other things that are present in the whole fruit and vegetable are eliminated. And so really all you're getting is concentrated sugar when you drink fruit juices, even natural fruit juices, you know, so they're not as good and they don't count as the natural sugars that you get from the whole fruits and vegetables. So so you have to balance all of that very well. Eating fruits and vegetables is a great way to get the sugar fix that you may be looking for, but avoiding all of these other added sugars is ideal. It's really what we need to be doing. So, all right. I hope that's helpful. I hope that there's some information there that you'll be able to use, information that you'll be able to take with you and make better decisions when you're at the grocery store. I think that all of this, while you know, the American Heart Association certainly was talking about cardiovascular risk, we also know that there's a relationship between sugar intake and mental health issues, behavioral issues. We know that there's a relationship there as well. I've talked about it in past episodes, and I think that the recommendations made by the AHA is consistent with what the research suggests as it relates to behavioral and emotional and mental health issues as well, connected to sugar intake. The less additional or added sugar that we consume on a daily basis, the better. And if we can keep it below 25 grams, certainly, but if we can keep it even lower than that, that's all the better. So, all right, that's all for today. Go read this article, read the paper, write to me if you have any questions, write to me if you have any observations in the paper that I didn't mention that you think is very important, and let's have a discussion about it, because I think that this is extremely important information. I also am asking again that you go on and write a review on iTunes or rate us on iTunes, just to get other people to notice us, to sort of push us up in the show notes, or not in the show notes, I guess it's actually the rankings. When people search mental health issues and things like that on iTunes, you know, we want other people to join in on this conversation. We want other people to hear the podcast so that they can talk about it. They can ask questions, and hopefully we can give good information that you can use, not idealized information that says, hey, you know, this is what utopia would be like, but real information that you can use on a daily basis to help yourself and help your family and help your kids and schools and everywhere else that we tend to find ourselves on a daily basis. So, all right, until next time, I'm Dr. Bernie. Stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.